Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. That's the New England Gospel Ensemble as they close the annual Martin Luther King Prayer Breakfast in Boston this morning. The event was attended by religious and civic leaders from around the city, including Governor Deval Patrick.
Each of us has what it takes to serve. Dr. King put it, he said, you don't need a college degree to serve. He said, you don't even have to be able to make your verb and your subject agree to serve. All you need, he said, is a heart full of grace. A soul motivated by love. Everybody can be great, he said, because anybody can serve. Let's make our Commonwealth that kind of beloved community. God bless you all, and happy Dr. King Day.
Boston has a special connection to the slain civil rights leader. King attended Boston University and often referred to the city as something of a second home. As WBUR's Dolores Handy reports, Boston was also one of the staging grounds for the civil rights movement.
On September 11, 1964, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. came to Boston to announce the donation of his personal papers to his alma mater, Boston University. He spoke of racial injustice, even here in the North.
This struggle, while we are based in the South, is a national struggle, and it requires the concern and support of people all over the nation. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. The problem is very serious in the North, and that racial injustice does exist in the North in a very serious way.
That message rings true to former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis.
Look, I grew up in the town of Brookline. Until the Civil Rights Revolution, really until the 1960s, people of color could not live in Brookline. In fact, they couldn't live on the northern side of the railroad tracks. They could work over there, but they had to go home to the other side of the railroad tracks.
Dr. King, the iconic figure of that Civil Rights Revolution, often referred to Boston as his second home. He'd studied here in the 1950s, earning his doctorate at BU. Here in Boston, he met a New England Conservatory student, Coretta Scott, who became his wife. Another milestone came on April 22, 1965, when he addressed a joint session of the Massachusetts legislature. There is no known recording of the speech, but at the end, he repeated, almost verbatim, the closing words of his I Have a Dream speech in Washington from 2 years before.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty.
On that April day in 1965, Governor Dukakis was a young member of the Massachusetts House representing Brookline.
I don't remember the details of the speech. Maybe it's a sign of advancing age, but I certainly remember the fact that he was there, that he spoke to us, and that it was an extraordinary event for us. He was a presence that's hard to describe. He was just a very powerful presence, and you felt that and sensed that.
That was also the sentiment of another young state rep, William Bulger from South Boston, who later rose to become president of the state Senate. While his recollection of the speech is vague, Bulger remembers it was well received. In his words, that was before the local stuff crested. The local stuff? A reference to the busing crisis that came some 9 years after Dr. King's speech in Boston. A more vivid image of that day comes from a man who was a first-term state representative from Roxbury, the Reverend Michael Haynes. Haynes had served with Dr. King as a youth minister at Roxbury's 12th Baptist Church when King studied at BU. Haynes delivered the invocation before the legislature just before King spoke.
Oh, the place was packed. There wasn't standing room in the hall at that time. A lot of legislators brought their whole families.
The day after that speech, Dr. King led what was described as Boston's first giant freedom march. The Boston Globe characterized it as a mile of marchers. They followed a 2.5-mile route from the South End to the Boston Common, where some 22,000 people gathered during light rain to hear Dr. King speak. He echoed themes that were voiced the day before in his speech at the State House.
He talked about the school situation. He spoke about the cancer that was affecting the nation, that if it wasn't dealt with, the nation would not have moral health. And that's an underlying diagnosis of racism at its worst.
The 60s, a decade of revolution and progress and pain. It brought the passage of the Voting Rights and Civil Rights Acts and decades of progress afterwards. It also brought a federal holiday to honor the slain civil rights leader schooled in Boston.
And I remember the first King holiday, the pride that I had, that here's an American holiday for America that embraces people of color.
Dr. King's Boston visit 47 years ago this spring still lives in the memories of many of those in the room that day. It was important to them. But Reverend Haynes says it was important to Dr. King, too. This man, who had moved a nation with his dream, had never spoken to a legislative body before that day. Reverend Haynes says Dr. King changed minds that day. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Dolores Handy.
Among Martin Luther King's connections to Boston was Howard Thurman, the pioneering black intellectual and preacher who became the first African-American chapel dean at Boston University in 1953. Thurman had been a mentor to King before King arrived in Boston, and he exerted a big influence on the entire civil rights movement.
Walter Fluker has been collecting and selectively publishing the papers of Howard Thurman. Fluker is the Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of Ethical Leadership at BU School of Theology. He was the keynote speaker at this morning's MLK breakfast at the Boston Convention Center, where we caught up with him to talk about Howard Thurman and his relationship with King.
Dr. Fluker, I want to ask you a little bit about Howard Thurman and how much Dr. Martin Luther King owes to his intellectual and spiritual legacy. Tell me a little bit about that.
The best way to look at Thurman and King in that respect is through the lens of tradition. They were both part of a very articulate, organic tradition, which we call black church traditions. And they were also graduates of Morehouse College. This is no small thing.
This is a historically black college in the
South. Morehouse College, right? Historically black, all-male college, found in 1867 in Georgia, moved to Atlanta later. But some of the greatest leaders, certainly in African-American communities, and I would add in America, have come through that little school. And so Thurman was a graduate of that school in 1923, 6 years before King was born. And also King's father attended Morehouse. And so Morehouse men tend to be very closely related. Now, there is evidence in King's papers at Crozer Theological Seminary in 1949 where he's actually quoting verbatim Howard Thurman's book, Jesus and the Disinherited.
Interesting. And let me ask you a little bit about that book and how Howard Thurman viewed religion. He had concerns, did he not? He was critical of certain religious dogma and practices that advance segregation. Is that right?
He was. In one sense, Thurman is religious in that he is interested in religious experience, almost like a scientist in a laboratory who is identifying a particular phenomenon and trying to understand it. Thurman is trying to understand religion. And the question that he raises for religion is, what does the religion of Jesus have to say for those whose backs are against the wall?
Interesting.
So in many ways, Thurman is not the traditional Christian because he's already interrogating some of the doctrines like the virgin birth.
He didn't necessarily believe in that, right?
He just simply says it's myth. And it's one of the ways religion helps us to better understand some of the larger questions of immortality, salvation. But the idea that there was an actual virgin birth was, of course, rejected by Thurman and many theologians of that era.
Mm. Now, he traveled to India in the 1930s. He met Gandhi, is that right? How significant was that meeting?
This was a watershed event in the life and in the career of Howard Thurman and of this tradition, which he also went on to influence in some very great ways. The backdrop to that, though, is that many African Americans had already been in correspondence with Gandhi, but not one delegation represented by African Americans had ever met with Gandhi.
And was it Gandhi's nonviolent approach to opposing the powers that be, was that the sort of most significant takeaway that would eventually influence the civil rights movement?
The most significant takeaway for Thurman was the idea of redemptive suffering expressed in satyagraha, a nonviolent resistance, or in soul force, ahimsa. Yeah. Thurman took that away as a method that he could use as a Christian. And as early as 1937, Thurman is lecturing all over the country, talking about the power of nonviolent resistance. And in volume two, which is being published, you begin to see how this idea germinates into lectures that he's giving all around the country. The other place that you need to see Thurman and King and Thurman's influence on King is a pastoral role.
Okay, interesting.
During 1958, King is signing his new book, Stride Toward Freedom. And remember, this woman, mentally ill woman, stabs him with a letter opener. King is hospitalized at the Harlem Hospital, and there's correspondence between Thurman and King around this event. This is very important. And what happens is that Thurman goes to King and asks him to take a convalescence beyond that which the doctors have ordered. King does this, and all of his biographers said he meditates, he prays more than ever. Shortly thereafter, Thurman says, you must deepen your channels if you're to remain in this movement, since it's growing like an organism on its own. Unless you deepen your own spiritual channels, you'll be swallowed up in it. King does this meditation, this prayer, and right after that, he's off to India. And King, before he leaves for India, is tactically committed to nonviolence. But when he leaves India, he adopts it as a philosophy of life.
And tell me about Martin Luther King's contact with Howard Thurman at Boston University, because that becomes quite central to the development of
Some claim that Thurman actually told King to come to Boston University. I don't see any evidence of that. But we do know that as early as 1953, Martin Luther King Jr. joins the Thurmans for the World Series. And Thurman also becomes a correspondent with King from that time onwards. And even until the early 60s, they're constantly trying to find dates where they can get together and to discuss. Thurman later in life has this great funny comment. He says, you know, I knew his family, I knew the young man fairly well, but I think I'm probably only the only person at BU in those days who did not teach Martin Luther King Jr.
That's interesting.
That was really Thurman's way of its wit and kind of sarcasm.
What kind of experience did they have together at Boston University?
King was deeply impacted by Thurman's preaching and the mystical experience and his language, the grandiloquence, the words, the full words, and the long creative pauses. One of the stories that King borrows from Thurman is a story of the slave preacher who preaches to the slaves when the master is no longer around. He says to them, you're not niggers, you're not slaves, you're God's children. This is Thurman's story he learned from his grandmother. King takes this and appropriates it and uses it in a lot of places. So he listened to Thurman's sermons, and he also had a lot of correspondence. In terms of the personal contacts, while at BU, we don't have a great historical record on that. But I dare say, there probably was not one individual in this country who was more deeply impacted by Thurman than Martin Luther King Jr.
I've read and heard him described as as one of the spiritual pioneers that shaped Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders. So I'm wondering, can we imagine Martin Luther King without Howard Thurman?
I don't think you get a King without a Thurman, nor do I think you get a Thurman and a King without this incredible tradition. For me, it's important to look at this tradition which produced world-class leaders. And it was during a certain time, during a certain era, Mordecai Y. Johnson, the first black president of Howard University, James Farmer, you remember the movie The Great Debaters?
Yes.
His father was a United Methodist, well, Methodist bishop in those days. It's on and on. Thurman taught James Farmer as well at Howard University. Huh. Benjamin Elijah Mays, president of Morehouse College for many years, he and Thurman shared offices and work at Howard University.
Interesting.
And it's on and on. It's a very articulate tradition.
I'm just curious, Martin Luther King, we remember him, we honor him on this day, but Howard Thurman, not so much. He's more obscure, I think, in the minds of the average American. Why is that?
Part of that is Thurman's own need not to spend a lot of time with public exposure. His primary interest was in the private life and in religious experience. He really is a mystic in the truest sense of the word. On the other hand, Thurman is recognized by a kind of burgeoning new movement and consciousness around the relationship of spirituality and social transformation. Thurman's meditations, his over 22, 23 books actually, are really finding audiences in not just New Age thought, as we used to call it, but a new kind of radical consciousness that embraces, strangely for me, not just religious actors, but those who do not have religious persuasions or confessions. I think it's a great moment. He said to us, I studied with Thurman in the late 70s, he said to us at the end of our time, he said, I believe that there's a new religion on its way in America. He says, my only disappointment is I probably won't be around to see it.
Oh, boy. Isn't that interesting?
He was really interested in the kind of technical tools of the spirit. In fact, he was a technician of the spirit, as some call those kind of folks.
It's a fascinating story. Professor Walter Fluker, thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Walter Fluker is the Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of Ethical Leadership at BU School of Theology. He was talking there about the preacher Howard Thurman, who mentored the young Martin Luther King. Fluker is also the editor of The Papers of Howard Washington Thurman, Volume 2, which has just been published.
And we'll end this segment with the New England Gospel Ensemble as they closed the annual Martin Luther King Prayer Breakfast in Boston this morning.
Stay with us. Up next, the story behind the collapse of Opera Boston, the city's number 2 opera company. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
If you do believe it, I know we shall.
We shall.
We shall.